Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. This is Carrie, and I think that we have April with us.
Indeed you do. Of course you do.
Huzzah!
I would never ever miss. I would never miss this episode. This episode is going to be so freaking awesome.
Yeah, I've already scared myself.
Yeah, me too. So I'm staying in one of my coworkers' houses while I'm working up here in D.C., and it's a really cool house, but you know how it is when you're in, like, an unfamiliar place or whatever, and you're just kind of like, ooh, what if this place is haunted? What's going on? Well, reading these damn stories, I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight, for sure.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my very own haunted house, and don't think I'm going to sleep tonight, so...
Well, you can chat me, because I will undoubtedly be awake, for sure.
All-night phone party.
Yep, and because I believe in shared, anguish. I really do. Perhaps that makes me a terrible person, but you know what? I really don't care that much. Because, you know, shared anguish. So I've also convinced Chris to listen, in part because
okay.
I know he's going to get too freaked out to sleep. That's exactly what's going to happen. He's going to be terrified. I love it. I'm so excited.
What I'm hearing is you're trying to guarantee that someone will be up with you all night tonight.
Yes, absolutely. Y-E-S, yes. For sure. But before we get into it, as always, Carrie, how was your week?
It was pretty good, so nothing super exciting or anything, but my girl's grandfather had been experiencing some possibly paranormal activity, so Kaylee got to participate in her very first paranormal investigation.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, so... he has been hearing some stuff. Stuff's been moved before, knocked over when nobody was home. So we did a little investigating.
And?
I have to say she did pretty great.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, no shit. She's her mother's child. Of course she's going to do great. But that's understandable, too. Aslan's had dealings before, and, you know, so
yeah.
She doesn't feel comfortable with that then. Hey, you got to do things the only things that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you do?
Exactly, for sure. So what did you think about the house? Did you think that there was any merit to the claims?
Yeah, I think it's possible. The house that they live in is half of a house and the other half is a post office.
Interesting. Still currently?
Yeah, so, yes. It's like a house split in two and half of it's still the post office. It's in like rural southern Maryland.
Wow, that's weird. It's interesting.
Yeah. Also, like, creepy abandoned houses around, too. Like, there's a house maybe, like, a mile down the road from him that is obviously abandoned and, like, junked up. But there's, like, these two massive old wooden trunks on the front porch. And I'm like, is there a body in there? What are we...
You should go look. You should go look.
Like, I mean, if it's empty, obviously I have to bring them home. But what if it's not empty?
What if it's full of treasure?
True. What if?
A valid point. I'm in D.C., so I'm close to it, you know? You give me an address, I'll go by. Figure it out.
Yeah, it's over near, like, Indian Head.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, one day we'll have to go explore the trunks.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, I've already been to Dr. Mudd's house over there, which is supposedly very haunted.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I would love to go there. We got to go sometime.
Oh, heck yeah, let's do it.
What?
So how
well,
was
my
your
week? I don't know how to describe it. It's not bad. So, like, last week is wonderful because I'm working from home, and I've discovered that working from home is actually almost worse because you work so many more hours than you normally would. So, like, I'll find myself doing research at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm just sitting there in my gym jams, eating cereal, you know, don't know what the hell I'm doing with my life. And I also begin to feel a little bit like a hermit because I don't leave the house ever, like for any reason.
Yeah.
Except for maybe tacos. That's it. That's the only conceivable reason why I leave the house.
You gotta leave tacos.
Or shower or anything. It's just I get to kind of live my life as, you know, as I would truly like, which is, you know, no responsibilities, just reading whatever the hell I want to. But now that I'm in the office, it's a lot lower stress and also higher stress at the same time. It's very weird. It's a very interesting little dance. So, like, I don't feel the pressure to keep working until 1 o'clock in the morning, but at the same time, I've got a lot of really cool people that not only do they want my attention, but I absolutely want their attention because they're amazing. So it's just, it's interesting, you know? It's a
That's
weird little dance that I'm starting
to discover.
And I have to put on pants. And that's not as much fun. But it's probably better for me. I have some human interaction. Because if not, I would just literally lock myself in my office and that would be it. I'm super excited. I think we got to get into these stories because I want to get through as many as we can.
Okay.
All right. Do we have Jake or is it just two of us?
I think it's just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
If he calls in, I'm in studio. So I'll see him.
All right. If anyone wants to call in and tell us their creepy story, by all means, feel free to do so.
If you call in and I see you, I'll just pop the button so you can chat with us.
Yep. It's if you pop in, then if you're on the phone, then you can actually just dial 1. And let me get the I'm trying to get to the number. Okay, it's
to call in
516. Yeah. It's 516-387-1922. So if you are on your mobile or you're on a phone, go ahead and pop that number right in, and then once you get into once you get in, go ahead and press 1, and that'll alert us that somebody wants to say something. So if you want to make a comment, by all means, call in or chat or do whatever you want. But we would like to get into these stories tonight. Carrie, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
You go ahead and go first. The one I want to start off with is kind of lengthy, so.
Yeah, I think all mine are actually kind of lengthy. So I wanted to do one that was kind of complimentary to one that
okay.
I think you're going to do. And so this one is called Never Go Camping Alone. It's by a guy named Senyan. You don't have this one, right?
No.
Okay, good. I figured. I had to dig back. Okay. I always loved camping. It's been one of those things that I fell in love with as a kid. My dad and I used to go camping all the time when I was young. He would always tease me about the creatures that would come up to our tents, wolves, bears, or monsters. He would often scare me with a monster mask he would bring with him, stand outside the tent and pretend to be a monster just to spook me. It always worked. I went out camping last week. It's been 6 years since my dad died. I decided to go out on my own to just enjoy it, relax, try to remember the good times I used to have with Dad. I miss those fun times. I met a kind couple who was camped not too far away. They seemed so happy that I was almost jealous. The day went by just fine. It wasn't until nightfall that something went wrong. I woke up with a jerk. I could hear heavy breathing and footsteps around my tent. My heart raced, and I didn't know why. I was disoriented. I didn't know where I was at first. having almost forgotten that I had gone camping. Then I laughed, telling Dad to stop. But Dad was gone. He had been gone for several years. That thing outside was not my dad. I felt a strong fear build up inside me as the snaps of twigs echoed in the emptiness of night. I heard no crickets, no wind, no nothing, but the thick, heavy breathing that circled around my tent. A shadow cast upon my tent, the fire outside still barely burning. It was stretched, disoriented, but long jaws, like a wolf, could be seen, with teeth that seemed out of place, crooked, and the thick slides of drool were caught in the shadow as it dripped. It had to be a wolf or a bear. I couldn't tell. Dad always joked. I never thought it would actually happen. A deep snarl came from the beast outside. I was so scared I couldn't scream. I reached for my phone to call someone, anyone, no signal. The beast outside began to rub against my tent. A cracked snarl as it breathed deeply. It could smell me. I knew it. I don't know how, but I knew it was there for me. It was going to kill me. The tent began to get pushed in, the creature outside clawing and pawing at it. Then suddenly it launched itself forward, smashing the tent in as it snarled and cracked an eerie howl like a wolf in the night. But wrong. This howl sounded man-made in a way. I could not scream, my tent now halfway caved in as the beast tried to find me. I would know where I was if I screamed. A heavy paw ripped through the tent. I had to cover my mouth with my hands as tears welled up in my eyes. I was going to die. I thought at first a bear paw, but its fur was missing. Claws nearly 3 inches long, each a toe broken and hanging off as if dead flesh, and stitches. I saw stitches going around the beast's ankle as if a human had helped it. I watched as the paw pulled out and a wolf-like muzzle shoved its way into the hole, trying to get its head in. Those crooked teeth pointed outwards, a second set inside its muzzle like a shark, ready to rip apart flesh. Stitches going across its furless flesh as it snarled and growled, trying to rip into the tent more. And then a voice. I felt my heart stop. Come out and play with me. Love me. I thought I had imagined it, but it kept talking in an inhuman, cracked voice, like what you would hear in a distorted recording. But this beast's mouth was moving. With every word, it spoke so fast, it's hard to remember it all. But I remember it kept repeating, love me. It demanded it. Demanded that I leave the tent and love it. I'll make you a part of me. We'll never be alone, always together, forever, in my flesh. I heard a scream outside my tent. A woman. I saw the light of a flashlight cross over the tent. The walls hadn't caved in. An unearthly roar. That same human-created, distorted noise. It was so loud, right over me. But then it left. It got off my tent. Love me! I heard it scream in the voice as it ran. I could only assume it was chasing the woman. I could hear her screaming, get off, blood-curdling screams of sheer horror as she cried. I was so scared I couldn't move. Morning came. I could not sleep that night. I heard a man outside my tent calling to see if I was inside. It was a man dressed in uniform. I guess he was the forest ranger that watched over the camping section. I slowly got out with his help. The couple that had been not too far from me, their tent ripped to shreds, an area marked off by police. The man told me a murder had happened. I asked the stranger what happened to the man who was with her. He gave me an odd look before asking what man. She had apparently come alone. I knew that wasn't right. I talked to them. She seemed so happy. He helped me get my stuff into the car. I packed up to leave and thanked him. As I closed my door, I heard knocking on my window. I rolled it down and fear struck into me as he stared at me with black eyes, red, inhuman pupils in the center, and tipped his hat, those stitches around his wrist. You'll love me next time. You'll never want to leave. I slammed on the gas pedal, looking in my mirror as I drove away, a creepy smile on his face as he just watched. I have never gone back. I am so afraid of going camping now. When I tell the story to anyone else, they just tell me it must have been a bear, and I was just scared, but that was not a bear. I don't know what it was, but it talked to me. It wants me to love it, and I almost want to love him back. We could be together forever. That's it.
So I have to say the creepiest part of that story was that fucking voice you did.
I had to practice that one. I had to practice it, but I'm glad.
Every time you went into it, I had to hold the phone a little distance away from my ear.
And so we've begun the slow descent.
Okay, so the story that I'm going to start with is one that I have read a couple times and I've shared it with you, and I can't really decide. So I'm sort of like still learning my way around Reddit, and like the creepypasta I get is, you know, stories that people make up. But no sleep, is that all made up stories? Is it a combination of made up and real stories and no one knows? Like,
yeah, that's it's supposed to be all stories, but I mean, I'm sure that there probably are some real ones on there as well, mixed in.
So this one to me sort of blurs the line between real and made up, and I still haven't decided what I think it is. So this one is actually from No Sleep, and it's by Search and Rescue Woods. The title is, I'm a search and rescue officer for the U.S. Forest Service. I have some stories to tell. I wasn't sure where else to post these stories, so I figured I'd share them here. I've been an SAR officer for a few years now, and along the way I've seen some things that I think you guys will be interested in. I have a pretty good track record for finding missing people. Most of the time, they just wander off the path or slip down a small cliff, and they can't find their way back. The majority of them have heard the old stay where you are thing, and they don't wander far. But I've had two cases where that didn't happen. Both bother me a lot, and I use them as motivation to search even harder on the missing persons cases I get called on. The first was a little boy who was out berry picking with his parents. He and his sister were together, and both of them went missing around the same time. Their parents lost sight of them for a few seconds, and in that time, both the kids apparently wandered off. When their parents couldn't find them, they called us, and we came out to search the area. We found the daughter pretty quickly, and when we asked where her brother was, she told us that he'd been taken away by the bear man. She said he gave her berries and told her to stay quiet, as he wanted to play with her brother for a while. The last she saw of her brother, he was riding on the shoulders of the bear man and seemed calm. Of course, our first thought was abduction, but we never found a trace of another human being in that area. The little girl was also insistent that he wasn't a normal man, but that he was tall and covered in hair like a bear, and that he had a weird face. We searched the area for weeks. It was one of the longest calls I've ever been on, but we never found a single trace of that kid. That was the obligatory, possibly Big Freddy kind of story. But the special request just for you, April, from Jake.
I love it. I love it. I love that story so much. I've read that story before, as well as the staircases, which I don't know if you're going to get into or not. But
yes. So I just wanted to tag you in that Bigfoot to continue. The other was a young woman who was out hiking with her mom and grandpa. According to the mother, her daughter had climbed up a tree to get a better view of the forest, and she never came back down. They waited at the base of the tree for hours, calling her name before they called for help. Again, we searched everywhere, and we never found a trace of her. I have no idea where she could possibly have gone, because neither her mother or grandfather saw her come down. A few times, I've been out on my own searching with a canine, and they've tried to lead me straight up cliffs. Not hills, not even rock faces. Straight, sheer cliffs with no possible handholds. It's always baffling, and in those cases, we usually found the person on the other side of the cliff, or miles away from where the canine has led us. I'm sure there's an explanation, but it's sort of strange. One particularly sad case involved the recovery of a body. A 9-year-old girl fell down an embankment and got impaled on a dead tree at the base. It was a complete freak accident, but I'll never forget the sound her mother made when we told her what had happened. She saw the body bag being loaded into the ambulance, and she let out the most haunting, heartbroken wail I've ever heard. It was like her whole life was crashing down around her, and a part of her died with her daughter. I heard from another SAR officer that she killed herself a few weeks after it happened. She couldn't live with the loss of her daughter. I was teamed up with another SAR officer because we've received reports of bears in the area. We were looking for a guy who hadn't come home from a climbing trip when he was supposed to, and we ended up having to do some serious climbing to get where we figured he'd be. We found him trapped in a small crevasse with a broken leg. It was not pleasant. He'd been there for almost 2 days, and his leg was very obviously infected. We were able to get him into a chopper, and I heard one of the EMTs say that the guy was absolutely inconsolable. He kept talking about how he'd been doing fine, and when he'd gotten to the top, a man had been there. He said the guy had no climbing equipment, and he was wearing a parka and ski pants. He walked up to the guy, and when the guy turned around, he said he had no face. It was just blank. He freaked out and ended up trying to get off the mountain too fast, which is why he'd fallen. He said he could hear the guy all night climbing down the mountain and letting out these horrible, muffled screams. That story bothered the hell out of me.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's...
Yeah.
Nope. So much nope. Just really
so much
nope. One of
the scariest... it gets better. So one of the scariest things I've ever had happen to me involved the search for a young woman who's gotten separated from her hiking group. We were out until late at night because the dogs had picked up her scent. When we found her, she was curled up under a rotted log. She was missing her shoes and pack, and she was clearly in shock. She didn't have any injuries, and we were able to get her to walk with us back to base ops. Along the way, she kept looking behind us and asking us why that big man with black eyes was following us. We couldn't see anyone, so we just wrote it off as some weird symptom of shock. But the closer we got to base, the more agitated this woman got. She kept asking me to stop and tell him to stop making faces at her. At one point, she stopped and turned around and started yelling into the forest, saying that she wanted him to leave her alone. She wasn't going to go with him, she said, and she wouldn't give us to him. We finally got her to keep moving, but we started hearing these weird noises coming from all around us. It was almost like coughing, but more rhythmic and deeper. It was almost insect-like. I don't know how else to describe it. When we were within sight of base ops, the woman turns to me, and her eyes are about as wide as I can imagine a human could open them. She touches my shoulder and says, "He says to tell you to speed up. He doesn't like looking at that scar on your neck." I have a very small scar on the base of my neck, but it's mostly hidden under my collar, and I have no idea how this woman saw it. Right after she says it, I hear that weird coughing right next to my ear, and I just about jumped out of my skin. I hustled her to ops, trying not to show how freaked out I was, but I have to say I was really happy when I left the area that night.
Oh, my God.
Mothman?
No, that's worse than Mothman. Mothman doesn't scare me at all. Like, we kept joking about it while we were at the Mothman Festival, but what's Mothman going to do, eat my clothes? I don't care. Okay, but what she's describing is terrifying.
So this is the last one he has here. This is the last one I'll tell, and it's probably the weirdest story I have. Now, I don't know if this is true in every SAR unit, but in mine, it's sort of an unspoken, regular thing we run into. You can try asking about it with other SA officers, but even if they know what you're talking about, they probably won't say anything about it. We've been told not to talk about it by our superiors, and at this point we've all gotten so used to it that it doesn't even seem weird anymore. On just about every case where we're really far into the wilderness, I'm talking 30 or 40 miles, at some point we'll find a staircase in the middle of the woods. It's almost like if you took the stairs in your house, cut them out, and put them in the forest. Asked about it the first time I saw some, and the other officer told me not to worry about it, that it was normal. Everyone I've asked says the same thing. I wanted to go check them out, but I was told very emphatically that I should never go near any of them.
Normal?
Yes.
Normal. That's, I would not consider stairs in the middle of the woods to be normal. For frickin' sure. And why were they so emphatic about him not going anywhere near them?
Well, he does continue the story, so I don't know if you want me to keep going or if you want to tell another one.
No, by all means, go for it, because I'm still concerned.
Okay. So there are like four different entries for this, but okay. So we've got a few more about weird missing persons calls. And I'll go ahead and touch on those. A teenage boy whose remains were recovered almost a year after he vanished. We found the top of his skull, two finger bones, and his camera almost 40 miles from where he was last seen. The camera, sadly, was destroyed. We also found the pelvis of an older man who had vanished a month earlier. That was all we found. The lower jaw and right foot of a two-year-old boy on the highest peak of a ridge in the southern part of a park. The body of a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome, almost 20 miles from where she'd vanished. She had died of exposure 3 weeks after going missing, and all of her clothes were intact except for her shoes and jacket. There were berries and cooked meat in her stomach when they did the autopsy. The coroner said it appeared as if someone had been taking care of her. There were no suspects ever identified. The frozen body of a one-year-old baby, found a week after vanishing in the hollow trunk of a tree 10 miles from the area where he was last seen. There was fresh milk in his stomach, but his tongue was gone.
Whoa!
Yes.
I've never heard of any of those before. Oh, yep. Those are pretty.
So now, here's where the missing persons meets the staircases in the woods. My buddy has been an SA officer for about 7 years. He started when he was a junior in college, and he had a very similar experience when he first encountered the stairs. His trainer told him almost the same thing mine did, which was to never go near, touch, or ascend them. For the first year, he did just that, but apparently his curiosity got the better of him, and on one call, he broke away from the line and went to go check a set of them out. He said they were about 10 miles from the path where a teenage girl had vanished, and the dogs were following a scent. He was on his own, lagging behind the main group when he saw a set of stairs off to his left. They looked like they were from a new house because the carpeting was pristine and white. He said that as he got closer, he didn't feel any different or hear any weird noises. He was expecting something to happen, like bleeding from his ears or collapsing, but he got right up next to them and didn't feel anything. The only thing he said that was odd was that there was absolutely no debris on the steps. No dirt, leaves, dust, or anything. And there didn't appear to be any signs of animal or insect activity in the immediate area, which he found strange. It was less like things were avoiding them and more like it just happened to be in a relatively barren part of the forest. He touched the stairs and didn't feel anything except that sort of sticky feeling you get from new carpet. Making sure his radio was on, he slowly climbed the stairs. He said it was terrifying because the way they'd been stigmatized, he wasn't really sure what was going to happen to him. He joked that half of him expected to be teleported to some other dimension and the other half was waiting for a UFO to come swooping down. But he got to the top of little event, and he stood there looking around. But he said the longer he stood on the top step, the more he felt like he was doing something very, very wrong. He described it as a feeling you'd get as if you were in the part of a building that you have no business being in, as if someone was going to come and arrest you or shoot you in the back of the head at any second. He tried to brush it off, but the feeling got stronger and stronger, and that's when he realized that he couldn't hear anything anymore. The sounds of the forest were gone, and he couldn't hear his own breathing. It was like some kind of a weird, awful tinnitus, but more oppressive. He climbed back down and rejoined the search and didn't mention what he'd done. But, he said, the weirdest part came after. His trainer was waiting back at the Welcome Center after the search ended for the day, and he cornered my buddy before he could leave. He said his trainer had this look of intense anger, and he asked what was wrong. You went up them, didn't you? My buddy said it wasn't phrased as a question. He asked his trainer how he knew. The trainer shook his head. They didn't find her. The dogs lost her scent. My buddy asked what that had to do with anything. The trainer asked how long he had been on the stairs, and my buddy said no more than a minute. The trainer gave him this really awful, almost dead-eyed look and told him that if he ever went up another set of stairs again, he'd be fired immediately. The trainer walked away, and I guess he's never answered any of the questions my buddy has asked him about it since.
That's it? The guy was just angry?
Yeah, the guy was really angry. So that's what his friend told him. Stairs, I don't get. Okay, so I mean, anybody that's been out in the woods or whatever has seen, you know, old abandoned ruins of buildings and stuff like. So that's not that weird to me, but like the unblemished white carpet, like that's.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
Yeah. Creepypasta.
Like, what is it? What is it? Why?
And nothing ever happened to that dude? I mean, maybe it's nothing. I wonder why that dude was angry.
I guess just because they're not supposed to go anywhere near them.
But why? You know, like, there has to be a reason.
The unspoken rule? I don't know.
Bigfoot's got stairs.
Yeah.
Weird.
All right. So, of course, part of me is like, well, man, now I need to go find out about the staircases. And part of me is like, no, don't fucking go anywhere near any damn staircases in the world.
Yeah. I don't know if I would go up the stairs. I would love to find a set of stairs in the woods, but I think that would be enough for me. I don't think I'd be able to go on them now. Like, if it's ruins, then I think that's one thing. But if it's, like, just a legit set of stairs that's, like, pristine, then I would be like, ooh, maybe I'm going to stay away from those.
That's a big old note. Like, regular ruins that you can tell, okay, well, this is obviously an abandoned structure, and that's fine. But just, like, a pristine, perfect set of, like, stairs in the middle of the fucking forest, no. Nope. Capital N-O-P-E. Nope.
Yes, agree. I would not force you to go up those stairs. Hell to the no. I would not even get. I might get a little close to them because I'd want a picture, but that'd be about it.
Yeah, I don't know if I would even want to take a picture. The fair. Yeah,
something might
just
follow you.
Nope, 10,000 times.
Bear man or something.
Yeah, so, like, okay, the stairs creep me out more than just the disembodied body parts because, okay, I think we all know that, obviously, meat-eating creatures live in the woods.
Yeah.
That's no shock to anyone. So, okay, you know, it's kind of creepy and weird and all that, but, okay, yeah, I get it. That's what happens in nature.
Plus,
yeah, I don't know.
Serial killers. Stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's natural explanations for those things.
Yes.
I think the creepiest one that you talked about was the forest ranger with the scar on the back of his neck.
Yes.
That's going to give me nightmares tonight, for sure. For sure.
Okay, picture it. See, I feel like now we need to write our own stories. It's just a mashup of these stories. It's, somebody with the creepy voice you did earlier is, where'd you get that scar?
No, Carrie, why did you have to do that? Why did you have to do that? Why would you do that?
I figured
that's all
out,
I can think about.
I figured out what the voice is. It's like Jimmy Stewart on a whole bottle of NyQuil.
Oh my God. Now you made that voice, and now I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. Thank you.
If I'm not sleeping, you're not sleeping.
That's right. All right. So my next one is called Butcher Face, and this is actually just part one It's really long, so it is what it is. Okay. But it's really good, so I had to do it. All right. In 1997, my friend, who we'll call Chris, moved across state. At that time, we were 10. We didn't really have much of a way to see each other besides getting a ride by our parents to one or the other's house, which would be a hassle for our parents, so we eventually lost contact. During this time, I had only gotten the chance to visit his house once. The story being in the subreddit, you'd expect the house to be creepy, but it really wasn't. It was a very plain, split-level house, probably built in the early 1980s with the neighbors close by, so it wasn't even secluded. Like I said, we lost contact with each other for 10 years. That is, until Chris contacted a mutual friend through MySpace. I didn't have an account on that site. We made plans to hook up and hang out. And now that we have our own means of transportation, it was a lot easier. After maybe a month of this, Chris mentioned that his family will be remodeling the house, and I offered my help. Him and his father gladly accepted the offer since the previous owners apparently didn't keep it up on themselves. So a couple weeks later, I drive down one weekend, and we start tearing up carpeting, ripping off wallpaper, etc. The basement had been changed into a room for Chris some years before, and while half of the floor was concrete, the other half seemed to have been torn up and replaced with floorboards. And one of the boards had become warped and broke, leaving it protruding up under the carpet, so they wanted to replace it. We tore the carpet up and started ripping out the floorboards when we found what looked like a hole dug about 5 feet into the ground under the floor. Chris jumped down there thinking he could get a better leverage to tear up the boards when he said something was down there. His father got a flashlight and we jumped down to check it out. It turned out to be a very worn box. It looked similar to a shoebox, but it was about 3 feet long and extremely damaged by the elements. It was so tattered that you wouldn't be able to pick it up in one piece. We believed that whatever was in it would be just as damaged, but when we ripped it open, we noticed that whatever was in it had the added protection of a black trash bag. That's always key right there. Chris picked up the trash bag, and its contents made the sound of plastic hitting plastic. We were curious as to what's in there, so we brought it upstairs and cut the bag open with a pair of scissors and found 24 unmarked videotapes. Me and Chris were curious as to what was on them, but his father claimed that they were most likely somebody's old bootleg collection, and if we're still curious, we should check them out later after we were done for the day. Since the plan was for me to stay the night and help him out the next day and leave that Sunday night, we decided to watch them that night. Since Chris's father was tired and didn't really care what was on the tapes, he went to bed a little early that night. So we pulled their old VCR from their attic, hooked it up to the TV in Chris's room, and took one of the tapes out of the bag and slipped it in. The tapes certainly weren't bootlegged movies like Chris's father believed. They were the home movies of a known man we will eventually begin to call Butcherface. There was seemingly no flow from one scene to the next. It was like he would just film something random for what was usually just a couple of minutes, and then put the camera away for God knows how long until he found something else that interested him. Most of the footage was random footage, like him turning on the camera, facing a chair. He would walk out from behind the camera to the chair, push it over onto the floor, walk back to the camera and turn it off. Or him playing with a random spider, which he would talk to in a low, childlike voice, then end the tape with him squashing it. Or him just filming down at his feet as he walks while deeply breathing. The one thing that always stuck out about all the footage is that on the few times that his face was shown, he was seen wearing what looked like a burlap sack tied tightly around his head with twine with two eye holes cut out. He was also a big guy, being easily over 6 feet tall with a decent build, but with some muscles, but not exactly buff. A lot of the footage was a lot more creepy and sinister. Some of the footage was of him videotaping people leaving buildings and houses. He was obviously hiding somewhere across the street from these locations, and he was often breathing loudly. Even worse were the things that he videotaped himself doing. One piece of footage showed him sitting at a table with a rat trapped in an empty large pickle jar. He unscrewed the pickle jar, took the rat out, slowly put his hand on its head, and started twisting until it stopped screaming. He twisted a little more until its head was completely ripped off the body. Then he turned the camera off. Another clip showed him in a barn.
which there was no barn on my friend's property, so we don't know where this was filmed. He turned the camera on, showing a pig tied to a post. He walked over to the pig with an axe in his hand and hacked its head off. What was really creepy was that most of the footage was shot in what was now my friend's house. It was always dark in the footage, like this man didn't like to have the lights on, but we did recognize various locations of the house. One piece of footage was obviously shot in the living room, which showed Butcherface using a large hunting knife to cut the power cord off of something we couldn't see, wrapping this cord tightly around his arm, grunting and moaning as he does it, and using the knife to cut deep cuts onto his hand and arm. One disturbing clip showed him standing in front of a table in the kitchen. On the table was a clothes iron. He then unzipped his pants, took out his penis, put it on the table, and pressed the hot iron against it. He screamed, but it didn't take it off for about 30 seconds. He finally took it off, limped over to the camera, and turned it off. What freaked us out the most was a clip of Butcherface in what used to be Chris's upstairs bedroom before he moved to the basement. He turned the camera on and showed the whole room covered in what appeared to be hundreds of lit candles. They were on every table, chair, and shelf. The walls were covered in paintings of grotesque and ghostly faces. He then walked to a corner of the room and started furiously carving something onto the floor with a hunting knife. He would stab it into the floor and drag it around, pull it out, and stab again. Since that room was vacant at the time and used for storage, and what was going to be renovated anyway, Chris's father let us tear up the carpet in that area of the room. What we found was a section of the floor that had been heavily sanded down with no real evidence of what had been carved there. Another tape showed footage of Butcherface in that same room with even more candles. He was on his knees facing away from the camera with his arms up in the air, screaming to be brought to the pits of pain and torture. One interesting thing about this clip is that he had only three fingers on his left hand, missing his pinky and his ring finger. He had all five fingers in the previous clips, and we think he cut them off. That was the last clip of that tape, and the camera appeared to run out of tape. The last piece of footage on the last tape showed Butcherface furiously digging the hole that we found in the basement. He was digging fast and breathing heavily. He was constantly grunting. His shirt was off, but he still had the mask on. After a couple of minutes of him just digging, he started talking, saying something like, "This is it. This is it. They won't know. They'll never find me. This is where I'll hide." And that's part one.
Ugh, yeah. That's,
yeah. Oh, Butcherface.
Yeah. Oof. That's the kind of thing that nightmares are made out of, I think. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh. And now it makes me wonder, you know, like, what else is going to be in that hole? Is he in the hole? Like, what the fuck? So,
wow.
That was just part one, and I think that there's two other parts available. So, if anybody's interested and they actually want to read it on themselves, the other two parts, that's by -32, and again, you can find that on Reddit OC.
That's like, the ongoing tales of Butcherface. So,
ongoing tales of Butcherface.
I have determined that I like/also hate the stories that ride that borderline of, is it real? Is it fake? Who knows?
Yeah.
So my next one's from Creepypasta. It's by Black Tech Unlimited. And the title is, "Someone's been coming into my house, and I don't know who or where they are."
Oh, God.
Let me start with some... Go ahead.
Oh, no. That's... Nope. We're just starting off on a bad foot already.
Yeah. Let me start with some backstory. I was never scared of much as a kid. I mean, sure, the regular scary stories make me slightly paranoid, but the only real thing I was scared of was spiders. That was all about to change. I live in a house with my mom, dad, twin brother, and older sister. Our bedrooms were upstairs. My parents were on the first floor. Outside my parents' bedroom hallway, there's the kitchen. To the right is the door to our back porch. There you can get to our deck. When this all took place, my mom was on one of her business trips, which is fun because my dad is self-employed. I stayed up later than I was supposed to because I couldn't sleep. I tried and tried, even turning off the lights I usually kept on at night. It just wasn't enough. I figured I should do something to take my mind off falling asleep, and maybe I would be able to. So I Snapchatted this girl that I like. After a while of laying there on my phone, I suddenly heard a noise coming from upstairs. I put away my phone, thinking it was my dad. It didn't sound like his footsteps, though. Who in the world could it be? I dug under my covers, and I just waited. Minutes felt like hours. I waited until I realized something. The subtle sound I was hearing wasn't anything from the house. It was the heavy breathing of a person. I felt my heart sink to the bottom of my chest. Then my worst fear was realized. I heard a slight knock on my bedroom door. It made me jump. I was done for now. I was sure of it. The person beyond the door had to have heard me jump, right? Then I heard it. The quiet, raspy voice. Anyone awake in there? I was done for. I knew it. I couldn't keep quiet. I was strangling myself, trying not to breathe. I wanted it over. I couldn't stand this whatever it was in my house. I must be dreaming. It better be a dream. I shut my eyes and everything went black. I woke up to a trash bedroom. My clothes were all over the place. I found papers on the floor that I didn't even know I still had. One of them was an old assignment from 2 years ago. I can't believe I still had it. I looked for two things, my knife and my wallet. I found my wallet right where I left it on the floor. Why didn't you take it, I wondered. I then turned and found my knife. It was stuck into my picture of Jesus. Who stabs a picture of Jesus? It was something my great-grandmother had given to me. I rushed downstairs and got my dad. He was surprised, of course, and didn't believe me. I took him upstairs to my room, and he gasped in horror. He instantly called the police. When they got there, they searched every inch of our house, and they found nothing. I told my dad to check the door history. The back door got open. That didn't make sense, though. The door was locked. It was locked when we woke up. I had to find out the answer. I set up a camera in our backyard. It was aimed at the back porch, subtly mounted on our trampoline. That night, I couldn't sleep. I kept imagining that breathing and that voice, that deep, raspy voice. I couldn't stand it. I finally fell asleep, but only to be woken up by rustling in my room. He was back. I stayed under my covers, but moved my hand into my pillowcase. I thought to move my wallet and a bigger knife in there. I grabbed the knife and waited for him to get close to me. When he did, he touched me and said, "Johnny, room's trashed again." It was my dad. What time is it? 4:30. Can I check the camera? Sure. I walked downstairs and then outside. I heard a strange noise underneath me. A squirrel ran out from the deck. It startled me. I went to the camera and brought it inside. I hooked up to my computer and watched the video. What I found was shocking. I watched a man walk up to our house at 12:20, unlock the door with tools, and then go inside. He didn't leave until 1:23. He was holding food in one hand and money in the other. He then disappeared into the dark. I showed my dad. He was surprised to say the least and said he wanted to know where this guy had found shelter. He called the police again and asked them to search around the whole house. They did and found nothing. I decided to search myself. Around 11 that night, I camped behind the couch. I had earbuds in and an alarm set. I woke back up at 12 and did some waiting. After a while, I started to hear something. I waited and waited. I watched as a man, around 40 if I had to guess, who was unkempt and wore baggy clothes, crawl out from under our deck. I watched in horror as he turned in my direction and smiled. He walked up to the door and then stopped. He just stood there for what felt like hours. Then he turned in my direction. "Staying up late, huh, John?" My heart dropped and I got up and ran. He turned to me and ran too. He was faster than me. And he was catching up quick. I pulled my phone out of my pocket, dialed 911, screamed for him to come to my house and gave my address. I cut to the side and raised my fist. Thoughts raced through my head. Was I going to be able to take a 40-year-old man? Was it a teenager? I ran at him and tried to punch. Luckily, I ducked and slid. He fell forward and I swept his leg. He dropped down and put my foot on his chest and pushed. He gagged and then turned over to throw up. Then I kicked him in the stomach. I heard the sounds of police sirens and my dad coming outside. I yelled at my dad that I had the guy. And the police came. They questioned him. I got them a sickening feeling when they told us what had been going on. I'll never forget what they said. Stan's been living under your deck since 2007. He has been watching you since he first came. He has been taking your food subtly and other things, and you didn't even notice. He had a weird obsession about you and kept coming in the house and watching you. Me, not my parents, not my siblings, me. I began to feel nauseous. I couldn't believe I had been stalked by this man since I was a kid. And now I watched as he was dragged away unconscious to the police van.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Yep. No. Oh, and now, Christopher, now you know why I refuse to take the trash out at night. Nope. Not doing it. Not going to happen. I don't care. That trash is going to sit right there all night. Not going to work out.
No.
That trash can wait. Creepy as shit. So who's not sleeping tonight?
Me.
Me too. Oh, I didn't get to my last one, and we've got about 8 minutes left. I don't know if I have time to read it.
Go for it.
Let me see. Okay. All right, I'll give it a shot. All right, I'll stop when we have, like, 2 minutes left. All right, The M Show Fan Club by Lena Lona. When I was 9 years old, I had a favorite TV series. It had human actors and animal suits. It was funny and educational clips in between. I don't want to name it because I just don't really – it was a really good show, and this story is not a fault of the show. I will just call it The M Show. The M Show was running for years, and I had been watching it for as long as I can remember. I always sat down straight after school with my older sister Scarlett and my best friend Brandy, who lived next door. It was our ritual every day the three of us sat together with sweets, if our moms allowed it, or else with apples or grapes. In breaks of the show, we talked and gossiped about all those important issues in our lives. Then, I remember it was a warm summer Friday, Scarlett found a prize competition in one of her girl magazines. It asked questions about the show, and first prize was to travel with your parents to Disney World. But even better, everybody who sent in the correct answers would become a member of the M Show Club, a fan club for the show. The same day, after watching the M Show, the three of us huddled together on the couch to answer the quiz. The questions were very hard. They asked details about old episodes of the show. Without Scarlett, Brandy and I would have never managed to answer all the questions. Scarlett begged our mom for stamps and envelopes, and we filled out the three envelopes, each with a paper with our names and contact details and the answers to the questions. Scarlett even told us to vary our answers slightly so that way we wouldn't be called out for cheating. The letters were sent off, and every day we all rushed the mailbox to get our M Show Club badges. When the first show, snow began to fall, we stopped checking the mailbox. Brandy was still passionate about the show and watched it every day, but Scarlett lost interest. When Scarlett stopped watching, I too began to skip the show. Brandy still came over, but she was the only one watching. I sat next to her while working my way through Scarlett's old girl magazines. It was early spring. I remember there were tulips in our garden, and my mom reprimanded me for plucking two to decorate the kitchen table. But right after her lecture, she handed me a small square letter with my name printed on it. The back said, "Welcome to the M Show Fan Club." There was not much in the envelope, only a short leaflet that welcomed me to the club and a small ID card with my name on it, a big logo of the show in black letters, the M Show Fan Club, and the line below, in big black letters, the word member. Brandy got her envelope the same day. She was glowing with happiness. Scarlett was jealous at first, but 2 days later, she got her envelope too. From then on, every Friday, each of us received a leaflet about the show with photos and anecdotes and personal information on the characters. Occasionally, the leaflets also called on the club members to promote the show and to watch out for the M Show tour. Either way, it worked. We loved the show afterwards. I think from that day on, after I proudly stuffed the membership card in my bag, I didn't miss a single episode. Then, in mid-June, we all got two leaflets. The first was the usual one with the facts and photos, but the second was an ad. The tour bus is in town. This is your chance to become an elite member. The bus was coming next Saturday to our town. We were all allowed to go. We were beyond excited. The leaflet didn't have much information, and that was before we had a computer at home. The tour bus would arrive at 1 p.m., and the main characters of the show would be there to welcome everybody and play games with us. Those that participated in at least four games would be upgraded to elite member status and receive new golden membership cards. Those 9 days of waiting for the M Show tour were some of the longest in my life. Brandy and Scarlett and I planned every day on how we would take photos with each of the characters and then play games with them. I secretly dreamed of beating Scarlett at the knowledge game where our knowledge about the show would be tested. On Saturday, Scarlett went to a birthday sleepover at one of her friend's houses. The parents were supposed to bring Scarlett back by 12 on Sunday. Around 12:30, Brandy came running to our house. She knocked on the back door like she always did, and I let her in. Brandy was beyond excited. Her mom had volunteered to accompany the three of us, and she wanted to go early so that she wouldn't miss anything. My mom called the house of Scarlett's friend, but they didn't pick up their phone. She said that Scarlett would be home soon, early enough to go on time. At 12:45, Brandy's mother came over to ask for us. She said that we would have to leave so that the queues wouldn't be too long. My mom said that we should wait for Scarlett, but Brandy threw a tantrum. She was scared that she wouldn't be able to hug all the characters if we came late. Brandy's mom decided to drive. I wanted to come along, but my mother said that she would drive Scarlett and me. I felt like I was being punished for Scarlett's being late. I begged. I cried. Nothing helped. Brandy went alone. Her friend's parents dropped Scarlett off at 1340. I was mad at her, but my mom said if I made a scene, we wouldn't go at all, so I relented. We arrived around 20 minutes later at the big parking lot where the bus was scheduled to stop. We saw crowds from the distance, parked the car, and walked over. I asked my mom where the characters of the show were. She said that they were just behind the crowd. They all held the M Show tour flyers, but it looked as if the crowd was mostly parents. They stood in a half circle toward the edge of the parking lot. Some of them looked concerned, but most of them were laughing and talking. My mom spotted Brandy's mother at the other end of the half circle. We walked over to her. Brandy's mother was one of the worried ones. She told us that the bus had been there, together with all the animal figures from the M Show. They had a large bus with the M Show logo, and they handed out sweets. One of the animal figures had explained to the parents that they had built a set outside of town where they could make our own short film with the characters of the show. They then said they would drive everyone there. They took the children first. They were all so excited that a few parents objected. Still, two or four parents came along, and that calmed the rest. The next bus was supposed to arrive within a few minutes to bring everyone to the set. And everyone is going to have to pick this up where I have left off because we have like 2 minutes left. But it is, again, it's called The M Show Tour, and that's by Lena Lona. They're the M Show Fan Club by Lena Lona, and that's going to be on Reddit No Sleep. So if you want to pick that back up, by all means, please do so. It is thoroughly creepy, I assure you, and I won't spoil it for you. Carrie, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Wrapped up in a blanket, my feet touched up on the bed, and all the lights on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to find my way downstairs so I can go to the bathroom in the dark, and that's going to be fantastic. But, all right, well, we have a little less than a minute remaining. I hope everyone has enjoyed this episode of Freaks and Geeks as much as Carrie and I have, because we have had so much fun with it. We can't wait to do another episode, and we're really looking forward to next week.
Yep, have a good night, everybody.
Night.